Our main speaker tonight is Peter.
Everybody, I'm Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. 4 hours later, two cabs, a $30 parking lot, and didn't get angry once. I'm here. So I'm considering myself a spiritual giant tonight. So if anyone needs a sponsor, get me now while I'm hot. Thanks, Stacy, for asking me to come down here while the president is in town. I appreciate it. Thanks. When I write inventory tonight, you know who's in my first column. I'm very grateful to be here tonight and to share my experience, strength, and hope with all of you. Alcoholics Anonymous is a sacred place for me, and if you haven't found that out yet, I hope on this journey that you do find that this is sacred ground we walk, and the journey put in front of us is sacred. We look at people counting days with 20 days and 30 days and 9 days or whatever it was, and I just offer to you the hope that I've experienced, not talked about, but experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because your last drink is done. Contemporary AA will tell you that you have to hang in there a day at a time, but I can promise you that your last drink is done if you follow a few simple rules laid out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's one of the promises in our book. And ain't that a good deal for people like us who are not supposed to be here tonight celebrating life like we do? That's a pretty neat deal, and how's that God for working in our lives each and every day? I know I'm thrilled about it. I'm very grateful for it. I'm very grateful to, on most days, be present like I am here tonight. Present with this breath, here with you, able to share. Not attached to the insanity that's going on outside, what I encountered on my way in here. No internal dialogue, but present. And it was a wonderful opportunity for me to practice breathing. Mindful of every breath I was taking. And knowing that God extended an invitation through you to me to be here tonight. And when that invitation is extended to me, I embrace it. Because what happens is we're able to commence on a journey shoulder to shoulder. And when we follow some simple rules, where we get to is a place called bliss. And alcohol is no longer part of our life. It's removed from the equation. And we're able to pack into the mainstream and see what we can do for God and people around us. We're not plagued with what happened before. We're not plagued with what may happen later on. Attached to my external world, using external remedies for an internal condition called alcoholism, but using God for the solution. And I will tell you up front, if you haven't found this out yet, I hope you do, that the solution to alcoholism is God and only God. And all the things we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, all the steps we do, all the fellowshipping we do, all the outings we do, all the step work we do, all the service we do, they are pointers to the power of God. And experience the glory of God, because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. And I will tell you, we ought to be in AA, a pep rally for the glory of God, a pep rally to someone who walks in the door, who is counting days, white-knuckling it, rocking and rolling, wondering when's it going to end, that we can tell them we have a solution for you, and you never have to pick up a drink again. And that is the great news we shout in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful to be a part of that. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. And tonight, I'm here recovered. I'm recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And when we say the word recovered, a lot of contemporary AA meetings, that'll ruffle a lot of feathers and split the room down the middle, because what they'll hear is cured, and I'm not cured. But I am recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And I will tell you, God has brought me to places where I've become recovered from alcoholism and all the things that accompany alcoholism. Once the drink is removed. Because if you're around here a little while, you'll know that alcoholism will go underground and resurface in other areas. Alcoholism will resurface in a fear spree, a sex spree, a food spree, a money spree, an anger spree, a spree. And we emerge remorseful with the firm resolution, I'm not going there again. I'm not going to get into that place again. But we get strange mental blank spots in here too on one of those sprees. And we come out saying, how did this happen? I'm going to meetings, I sponsor 20 people, I have a sponsor, how am I doing this? How does that happen? It's called reemergence of ego and thinking I've become the power. And suddenly the disciplines I've worked with up until that point get put on the back burner because I start to feel good, which is a neat thing. But that becomes my higher power. I start to worship my emotions rather than the power. See, what happens to us in here is that we get power. I'm no longer powerless. I get great power. Page 68 in my big book says that God will demonstrate through me and through you what he can do. That's great power. But I am not the power. There's a difference. So for people who are sitting here tonight wondering how they're going to get to that place where they're free, follow the instructions in the big book and it will be done for you. That is the miracle of it. We get taken. Step two says, came to believe. It's an arrival. We get taken. Good deal. A lot different from just put the plug in a jug and make 90 meetings in 90 days, middle of the road solutions, and people die off of stuff like that if you're a real alcoholic like me. Because I subscribed to that remedy and I kept winding up in rehab and jail and homeless in 1988. Based on that, and I used to say, well, AA don't work for me. What am I going to do? I've tried religious communities. I've tried shrinks. I've even tried this place, AA, and they told me just put the plug in a jug and I'll be fine. And if you're anything like me, the plug came out of the jug and I found the back of a hallway and I got drunk and woke up 3 days later. Solution is God. My home group is a Vision for You group in Union, New Jersey. We meet Thursday nights at 7:30. We talk about the solution from the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, and most people in my town don't like us. Until they hit a bottom, and then they come looking for us. And when they're really desperate, they ask me to sponsor them. But if you walk into the Vision for You group, you're going to hear something about a solution. We're going to hear some Q&A to the speaker about things he or she presented to the group. Because we want a newcomer to go home with armed with the facts, some sort of instructions on how they can stay away from a drink another day and another day. And suddenly, you're not counting days because you're integrated with this power. And time doesn't mean much. We're present. To tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, what I'm trying to be like today, living in the sunlight of the Spirit. My first drink came when I was about 14 years old. Until this moment, as I stand here with you now, my life has never been the same. I had a spiritual experience on my first drunk. It was absolutely wonderful. It was indescribably wonderful. But there I was in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, on the corner with a bunch of guys hanging out, and they were drinking cold 45 beer. This was around spring, summertime. Lost my mom about 6 months prior to this thing called alcoholism when she took her life after several attempts at doing it. And I was completely leveled with that. My design for living was removed. My legs were taken out from under me, and I had no idea what to do with this thing I'm supposed to live, call life. I had a guy called Dad who was cunning, baffling, and powerful, and I had no idea how to operate. The pain of losing this woman that I was attached to at her hip, pretty much, was incredible. It crippled me emotionally, and I wanted to run. For years, I just wanted to go meet her. I figured out a way to go meet her. But something happened this one night, Saturday night, while my friends are passing around a quart of cold 45 beer. I put my hand in there and took a few pops off the quart. After many, many stern warnings from my dad about not to be drinking on the corner with those guys. Don't you bring any of those girls on the corner by this house. And I listened, because when he spoke, I shook in my shoes pretty much. Until this night. And I watched my friends pass around a quart of beer, and after about three or four times, I put my hand in there, and I took a few pops off that quart, and nothing happened to me. I was waiting for, like, the cops to drive up, or my dad to drive up. None of that stuff happened. So I continued to drink, and I drank a little bit more, and I continued to drink some more, and then something happened to me that I never experienced before. It was indescribably wonderful. I got a sense of ease and comfort that our big book talks about, which came by taking just a few pops off a quart of cold 45 beer. And suddenly everything stopped. The judge that was screaming in my head 24/7 what a loser I was stopped. The internal dialogue stopped. The fear that was driving me stopped. Everything stopped and I was present. And as I continued to drink, I got taller and better looking. The girls were talking to me. I was talking to them. I was Dirty Harry and Beretta rolled into one. Actually, in Bensonhurst, I was like Michael Corleone, to be quite honest with you. My hero went from like Mickey Mantle to Al Pacino in 20 minutes. That's why I was in therapy for almost 10 years, man. But I drank Colt 45 beer, and it did a good deal. It worked. The pain of my mom was removed. The fear of my dad was removed. Fear, in general, was removed. And I was present. And I was able to do things and experience things I never could do up until that point. I could roughhouse with the guys and hang out and do all the things I saw the older guys always doing. All the guys, they were like 17, and I considered them old-timers. We were all rebels without a clue, but there we were. The first drunk, and I've heard many of us share some terrible consequences that happened to us on the first drunk. None of that happened to me. I went home that night, and I got up the next day, went down to the park to play basketball with the older guys. But there was something different about me on my way into the park. My shoulders were now a little bit wider because I had gotten my stripes the night before. Bill says three great words in his story. I had arrived. Drinking Colt 45 beer, when I got present and fear was removed and I felt like I could measure up to the other guys, I arrived. What a good deal. I will tell you this, that alcohol worked on my alcoholism. It was a solution. It worked for many years. It was not a problem for me. It was not a problem for me. It was a solution. I look forward to the next drunk because it was going to take me to a place that was indescribably wonderful. It was the power and it was working. All my bedevilments were removed when I was drinking. So I'll take more. I knew nothing about what makes me an alcoholic. I watched my mom die from this deal. When I was a little kid, my dad would drive me down the Bowery and look at, you know, what was taking place down there and say, that's what happens to you when you do certain things. But I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I had a vision of what maybe one should look like. And then I found out firsthand, after treatment center, after treatment center, after treatment center, and becoming homeless at the very end, and living under the boss of alcoholism, what an alcoholic is. Three things that separate me from the people out there who are drinking tonight. Mental obsession, phenomenon called craving, and a spiritual malady. And if you watch CNN News, half the world has a spiritual malady, right? But what's different about me? That I have a mind that's going to take me back to that which is killing me over and over and over again. Regardless of the consequences, on Monday, Tuesday, my mind tells me Monday wasn't that bad. And once I pick up a drink, the craving is always intensified, never satisfied. Add a spiritual malady to that, and I die at the hands of alcoholism unless I experience some sort of freedom. Not relief, but freedom in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. To the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is going to take me to a power of God. The first drunk, no consequences. I got up, I went down to the park, and I remember thinking, I can't wait for the following weekend to roll around because I'm going to capture that elusive feeling and get to the place that's out there that's indescribably wonderful. I'll take more of that. It worked. And I was drinking on weekends for a while, and I got the brainstorm that I can start this on Friday instead of waiting until Saturday. And I was drinking Friday and Saturday, and then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And little by slowly, I found myself drinking during the week, and something was happening to me. I couldn't control now the stopping. See, many times in AA, you'll hear some bad information or by someone who isn't a real alcoholic to say, well, today I have choice. And my question to them is, where was choice when you were out there ruining your life and everyone you came in contact with? Did it suddenly show up? Did you think you can control the stopping and starting? Because I couldn't, and I was already having a problem controlling the stopping. My friends were going home. Last call, they'd go home, and I'm looking to go elsewhere to continue to drunk. Some unmanageability right up front, some obsession of mind, some phenomenon of craving. My consequences as I continued to drink started to get like severe quickly. It would be little things like me not being able to stop, then missing a home curfew, then starting to steal from my family who loved me and adored me, and started to have a shift in perceptions from within about who my family was. Up until I got drunk, they were pretty neat people. When I start to experience alcoholism at its fullest, they had the problem and not me. And so if they had money or jewelry lying around and I need money to get fired up, it was mine and had a right to it. I had this thing of entitlement. And how dare you bother me when you find something missing? I thought it a great injustice. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, and I was full-blown already. And so what I started to do some more was steal from my family, and I stole from my dad's checkbook one day, and I got caught with all these forged checks, and he came looking for me. And my dad's like a longshoreman. He's a tough guy from South Brooklyn. It isn't like Leave It to Beaver, where dad has a shirt and tie, and we retire to the den for a little talk, you know. My dad, any street corner would do. And he came looking for me over in Southbridge Towers down by the Brooklyn Bridge is where he caught me. He came looking for me and caught me down there. And my dad's present shows up about 20 minutes before he does. And he jumped out of the car. I told the girl in the car, you deal with him, I'm leaving. And he caught me. And I went away to my first treatment center. And after 28 days of, you know, doing all the rehab deal, the push-ups, the sit-ups, and talking about a lot of fancy therapeutic words, all middle-of-the-road solutions for someone like me, I was already planning my next drunk. I got out after 28 days. I looked terrific. I was going to the gym. I was eating. I was sleeping. Had not conceded to my innermost self that I was a real alcoholic. I went away because I got caught. And when I got out, I had a girlfriend meet me with a bottle, and I was back on the vicious cycle again, and I made my second treatment center, third, fourth, and fifth treatment center, and I got bounced off the Brooklyn waterfront where I had one of my first jobs. A job impossible to lose. They asked me not to come back anymore. I got this this little apartment that my dad kind of set me up with, and I was to hopefully get my job back, get into a nice relationship with someone, and kind of turned the page on this very ugly life I was living. My family, including me, thought a human power could relieve me of alcoholism. And in a short time later, I got bounced out of this apartment because I brought the Bowery into this little one, this little studio place. It was a horror show. I wasn't bathing. The bed was soiled. I had Blackberry brandy bottles all over the place. There was garbage all over the place. I looked worse than it did. And after not paying rent for a short time, I got bounced out of this place, and I wound up in my sixth treatment center and eventually my seventh treatment center. My fifth treatment center, by the way, I spent 9 weeks in there, physically separated from alcohol. I was out on Saturday drunk on Monday because I still had the mind of an alcoholic. And then I was homeless, unemployable, and bouncing from hallway to hallway, all downtown Manhattan. Day and a half of my sixth treatment center, and I signed myself out and back on the streets again because I still had the mind of an alcoholic that told me it'll be different this time, that I can do it a different way. I'll control and regulate. I'll control and enjoy. Every lie that my mind can possibly give me, I was buying. How many times does our mind tell us something? We say, well, I thought of it. It must be true. Right? They really are talking about me. You know, things like that. So my mind would say, we'll do it different this time. I pick up a drink and the allergy kicks in and I'm back to the horror show again. And really by the grace of God, that and the courage, strength, and direction that God gave my dad, I wound up in my seventh treatment center and here tonight. Because if it wasn't for the courage, strength, and direction that God gave my dad, you have a different speaker here tonight. Because he was like the cavalry many times showing up when no one else would. And whether he would take me or throw me out, he was doing his very best with what he knew to keep me alive. One of the things he told me on my way into my seventh treatment center was, I'm not going to lose my son to this. And he would knock down walls to keep me sober, whatever it took. And through a series of circumstances, and I'm like pretty short on time here, I wound up outside the Port Authority one night, homeless. And I don't know how I got there or what happened to me afterwards, but there I was on the 9th Avenue side of Port Authority, and I had a moment of clarity. The flimsy reed, which proves to be the loving and powerful hand of God, was served to me by God. And I was struck sober, a window of opportunity, a small one, but there it was. And I knew at that point exactly what I was, a drunk, and I'm going to die this way. And as Bill says, I almost welcomed the idea. It'll save everyone else a lot of pain and misery. I had thought of my mom who passed and my dad who I hadn't seen for quite some time and my two kid brothers. They were all suffering from my alcoholism. How arrogant, how selfish for an AA member to say that all I have to do today is not drink and I'm a winner. Because what about the people's lives we tore up on the way into this sacred place called AA? We're like tornadoes roaring through the lives of others. My family was dying of alcoholism and they weren't alcoholics. Years of living with an alcoholic will make any wife or child neurotic. The whole family is to some extent ill. That's my big book telling me that. And I found it to be true. And yet my dad showed up over and over and over again to help me. And I wound up outside the Port Authority and I cursed God for taking my family from me, for taking my brothers and my dad from me, for taking my mom from me. And I let him have it with no uncertain terms. very earthy street language, I let God have it all. And my heavenly Father didn't keep a scorecard. Didn't say, you know what, Peter, you burned every bridge I put in front of you. You've cursed me too many times. You've destroyed your family. Now I close doors on you. No, I tell you what he did. I got leveled a little bit more, and I wound up in the back of a hallway on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, and I had, again, a moment of clarity. And here's what took place this time. We go in here, even currently, when we're experiencing some untreated alcoholism, we go from suffering to surrender, and then in surrender, resistance stops, and we get present. Because as long as I'm suffering, I'm trying to run the show one way or the other. I'm trying to cut an angle, trying to figure out a way that it'll be okay on my terms, and we suffer. And we suffer like that with sprees also, not only with the bottle in our hand. And we go from that place to surrender, where resistance stops. And in that hallway says, if you're out there, please take me from this. I'm done. And I knew it. I knew deep down in here, way beyond conceding, that the next drink, I'm going to die. And for the first time in my life, the very first time in my life, and I don't give that lip service, I did not want to die. And that was the beginning of a spiritual experience for me, with a mustard seed of willingness. I was willing to be made different, willing to be made new. And when resistance stops, we get present, because we go from our mind, where ego and resistance lives, to our spirit, where God is, deep down in here. So if you want to find God, you got to be out of your mind. It's a joke, Peg. But that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened for me. I didn't know that then. I just knew that something was different. And I made I tried three collect phone calls to my dad. I never forget, because the only one who's going to come get me in this condition is my dad. And I would try to call, and I'd have these crying jags. And my dad had a premonition that I was in trouble, and he drove up from South Jersey, and he caught me in Brooklyn. He found me, I should say, in Brooklyn. And the way he got out of the car this time was certainly a lot different from the first time that I shared about a moment ago. He walked across the street, and I collapsed in his arms. And I remember him holding on to me, telling me I was going to be okay, that he was not going to lose his son to this stuff. And he stood proud and tall in the most sordid spot in my life, the most sordid moment in my life. That's what God does for people, not only in Alcoholics Anonymous, people. We hear in AA God works through people, but it isn't only us. It's people. And for me, it was my dad. And I was sent off to, God willing, my seventh and last treatment center. And after about 10 days in there, the insidious insanity was starting again. We can do it different. We can figure out an angle. It was starting. I still had the mind of an alcoholic that not yet experienced the power of God yet. I had willingness. I had a desire, but not enough. And they sent me off to Minnesota, where people out there blessed them, because they gave me the real deal. And they didn't care how many times they disturbed me on the question of alcoholism. They weren't too interested in my feelings and my issues and my triggers. They were looking to save lives. And they told me, you're suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience would conquer. And that is God. It's the glory of God. And that's what you need to be integrated with. Because you're coming in here, like most of us, with old belief systems about what God is, what God is not. Those are some of the obstacles in our path to getting free. We talk about God. We bristle with antagonism, because what is brought in here is the stuff we learned on the way in here. And if God would have worked, I would have gotten sober a long time ago. And then we go through this work and we discover great stuff. Uncover, discover, and discard the things that are blocking me from this power. And I get free. See, the neat thing about experiencing God is not relief. It's really, truly liberation. It's freedom. If you're experiencing relief in here, that's bondage. You know, I got to go to the 9 a.m. meeting, the 12 o'clock meeting, the 3 o'clock meeting, the 6 o'clock meeting, home group at 9 o'clock. Tomorrow morning, I get to that other meeting, and we start knocking out 3, 4, 5 meetings a day. You know, sharing our dramas of life, and it never gets better. And we get a little relief for the hour, and that's all it is. Alcoholism doesn't care how many meetings I make. It'll lay in wait. Unless I experience the power of God, then alcoholism has no shot. That's why those people who are counting days, your last drink is done if you follow a few simple rules. It's done. You never have to drink again. Dr. Bob said it, for good and all. Our book talks about stopping altogether. These are great promises. Our book uses the word recovered I don't know how many times. Not recovering, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And people out in Minnesota gave me this information, and I held on to them for dear life because this was it. This was the last stop for me. I was beaten into a place of reasonableness, and anything other than what I was doing looked good. I'll never survive another journey to hell like that. But here tonight, standing here with a little bit of dignity, I'm really glad that I visited those valleys because it brought me here where I am tonight. Free. Pretty neat deal. I remember being brought to my first home group, the Free Spirit Group, in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. And I didn't know who to ask for a sponsor. People said, get a sponsor. And I prayed. And my first teacher showed up. If you're looking for a sponsor, pray. Ask your Heavenly Father. Show me a teacher. He or she's out there. Why are we to deny someone to take you to him? That's what a sponsor is. Follow the path I walked. You'll have your own journey, and you'll experience God and get free and go back into the fellowship and pull out another drunk. And that's what we do. We get resurrected in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get reborn in Alcoholics Anonymous, no longer suffering from the pains of alcoholism. That's why we ought to be a pep rally for the power of God in Alcoholics Anonymous. And not tell a newcomer, just hang in there, don't drink and go to the meetings. That's a death sentence. That's a middle-of-the-road solution. We offer so much more in Alcoholics Anonymous. Even this big meeting tonight, and all our local meetings, our big book, our 12 steps, all the fellowshipping, God is so much greater than that. We need to share that with others, especially the new people. Why would God deny one of his children freedom? I prayed for death at the end. That was my way out. Take me from this with a few choice words because I'm done. I can't do it. And I'll save my family more pain and more misery. And in the back of that hallway, when I made the sincere plea to God, Father, please, if you're out there, take me from this. He said, enough. And I have other work for you to do and set me on this path. And I've been chasing this information and these experiences with the desperation of a drowning man. 17 years later, I work with a lot of things outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, not instead of, but along with. How can I experience this power? How can I experience this power and pass it on to a newcomer? Am I on with the facts when a new person walks up to me and says, can you sponsor me? And what about the guy or the woman who's in here maybe tonight with 20 or 25 years and is afraid to tell anyone that they're dying on the inside, that all they're doing is thinking about drinking and suicide? I better be prepared to help that person also because they're just as much a newcomer as the person, you know, rocking and rolling with 3 days. Because we have a lot of them in AA, and their ego and their alcoholism won't allow them to say, hey, I'm dying, can you help me? I better stand ready at the door on the firing line. God has allowed me to do that. I was brought home from Minnesota, and after joining the Free Spirit Group, I was actually taken there. I was a member of that group for a long time and worked with this one sponsor, and I moved out to Staten Island and became a member of a Way Out group, now a Vision for You group. And my family, we all grasp new soil. Our roots grasp new soil today because of what I've been able to bring home, what God has done for us. And I live free today. I get to do a lot of this. I get to go out and do this stuff. And I speak to a lot of people who relapse. And they all tell me they stop making meetings. And I was always searching for an answer. There's got to be something behind the not making meetings. And I would give them some considerations, and they all would say that their relationship between them and God stopped. And for people like us, we pick up a drink and die. And I'm going to share this with the few minutes I have. Because I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, the world continues. Because I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, things happen. Sometimes the external world collapses on you, and you're wondering what happened. And in about 20 minutes, I found myself going through a divorce, just about to lose my house, unemployed, couldn't get a job, couldn't get arrested, and my finances bled to death. It seemed like in 20 minutes, and I had no idea what was going on. Turned completely upside down. And I looked up and I says, you stop reading my script. And I had a few choice words for God. And I doubted God. And I thought maybe he was done with me. What do I do? And in the back of a parking lot coming out of a restaurant, I made a surrender to this God. He says, whatever it takes, you run my life again. I'm done. Please, Father, help me. And I went through this work again. And I've gone and revisited the first 9 proposals over and over and over again. And I have found out so many times that it's my perceptions of a situation which caused me pain and suffering, not the reality of it. not if I'm integrated with God, everything's okay, everything's perfect as it ought to be, present here and now. I work with a meditative life. I work with a prayer life. I work with disciplines. I fall short in thought, word, and deed every day. But I seek this power because it is my solution. I got through those very, very difficult times. A couple of scrapes on me, but with a lot of dignity because of what God allowed me to do. And I'm able to help others now who come to me, hey, I'm going through what you did. How did you move through that? Well, I have an answer for you. It's God. Thank you for listening.